delighted to have you in the podcast where all stories are welcome and the masks come off. Hi, Vimla.
Hi, Sheba.
Welcome to Soul Brews with Sheba, and so delighted to have you here on Coffee and Soul. Thank you so much for making the time, Vimla.
Thank you for creating this space for all of us.
Wonderful. I'm really glad to have you here and to host you. Do you have your cup of coffee with you?
Yes, I do. It's already. We have South Indian filter coffee.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. Yes to great coaching and many more years of fruitful engagement with people.
Absolutely.
Oh, this is good coffee. All right. Okay. So, Vimla, can I ask you to just hold this cup of coffee in your hands, if it's not too hot?
Absolutely, yeah. Nice and warm.
Okay, good. Can you just sit back and relax? Just breathe and relax. Lovely. Close your eyes and see if something comes up for you, whatever.
Actually, what's coming up is this dichotomy of this warm, hot cup of coffee and the cool breeze that's coming in, because I live in Bangalore and it's monsoons and it's so nice and cool and just nice breeze, and the paradoxes of cool and hot and how that just plays on our lives.
That's very interesting. Speak to me a little bit more about that.
Well, I think our lives are paradoxes. We are a little bit of everything. We are both, you know, we say we're both extroverted and introverted. We're both shy and brave. We're both courageous and fearful. And so we live in a world of paradoxes. And to kind of experience that in that moment was actually very enlightening.
Yeah. And so what does this mean for you? Paradoxes, living in paradoxes, in experiencing it.
Well, it's kind of like how we choose to see the world. The world is just the world, but we can see it as good or bad, right or wrong, in or out. And when we make that decision of what it is for us is when we actually experience that. But it's actually both. It's both good and bad. It's both, you know, things are both near and far. And when we really truly understand our experience or how we observe the world is our experience of the world.
Absolutely. And thank you for bringing this up so early in the conversation, because so true, isn't it? Looking at the and living with the ambiguity and being able to, they say that you truly grow up and whoever they are when you can live with ambiguity.
And we're being tested with that, right? As a global experience, living with uncertainty, living with mask or no mask.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Vimla, moving from paradoxes, ambiguities, uncertainties, making peace with them, moving from there to where it all began for you, I'd love to hear your journey. And what brought you to the space of these kinds of reflections, you know? So would love to hear how it all began and where did you go?
It's actually very easy. My life is I consider it in three sections. There's India, US, and then India. So it's very geographically placed. I was born in India, born in Madras, now Chennai. But I left India when I was about 3 years old. My parents migrated to the US, whole family shifted over there. So all my education, foundation, formidable years, and my adolescence, and also my college was done in the US. My first job was there. And I have a PhD in pharmacology. What we call pharmacology here, it's actually called a PharmD in the US, a doctorate of pharmacy. And I did a lot of work in clinical research in academia first. I was an assistant professor for about 4 or 5 years, then went into corporate. And then it depends on who you speak to in my life. I had a breakdown in certain people's world. In my world, I had a spiritual revelation. You can look at it both ways. Say it's another paradox. Challenged myself to finding my purpose. I mean, I was really stuck with why am I here? I was in my late 20s and just couldn't figure it out. I'm like, you know, I went from really working hard with students and I knew who I was, had a really strong identity of being a professor and a clinical researcher, to working in the corporate where I couldn't really find a space for myself. And then I thought, if I can't find a space in my work, then who am I? And went to a lot of soul searching. And I was raised with the Vivekananda Vedanta Society in Chicago. And just kind of found myself in the monastery there, Vivekananda Monastery in Michigan. There were about, I think, 100 Swamis there from all over the world, because it was Swami Vivekananda's 100th centenary. On the day that I decided to have this epiphany / breakdown, and my Swami said, just come, but nobody can answer this question for you.
And what was the question?
Why am I here? What's my purpose? Why am I here? I don't understand. I don't get it. And he invited me to just sit with it. And I sat in the woods for about 5 days. And I had lots of ideas, just sat with the fire. And it was in August. And it was really hot. And I still had this fire going. And they said, no, sit with the oven, sit with your thoughts, sit with anything that comes up. And I was not allowed to talk to anybody. He said, nope, no speaking, just sit. And it was painful. It was almost like a Vipassana that we do nowadays. I didn't even know what it was. And I just sat. And at the end of that, I knew that my purpose, and I experienced a purpose with children. And I wasn't working with children at the time. I was working with adults. But I knew that I had to do something with children. And I didn't know what that was. And the very next day that I returned back to my home and my apartment, I got a call from a hospital that I used to volunteer in called Shriners. And Shriners Hospital in the US is a spinal correction facility, and they do everything for free. So the Shriners, mm-hmm. is the Freemasons, they just built these hospitals to do spinal surgeries. And they called me saying, we have a girl from India. Can you please come and help? I don't know any Indian languages. I can't even cook Indian food at that time. And I said, yeah, I'll come. And this little 12-year-old girl was there, scared out of her mind. And as soon as she saw me, she said, Akka, which is in Tamil, sister. Yeah. And that was it. And I said, oh, here she is. And the lady who brought her to the U.S. had an organization in Chennai. And she said, I'm looking for somebody if you want to, you know, bring this child back. And I said, yeah, so I spent 3 months with her in the U.S. And she went from never walking, because she had polio and she had a spinal curvature. They corrected her spine and she took her first step in my mom's house. And then we brought her back to India and I fell in love with India. Fell in love with the children of India. And then went back to the U.S. and quit my job and returned to India. That was in February. I returned to India in June. This was 1994, and volunteered for a few years here at this organization. And it was a lovely experience. There were 100 children, and all I did was, you know, got to play and grow with these children. Both, you know, they had girls in Chennai and then boys in Bapatla, Andhra Pradesh. So I went back and forth between the two homes. And it was an amazing experience. And then, as I said, life happened. Unfortunately, my father passed away. And I was rushed back to the U.S. My mom fell ill a month after my dad passed away. I was in the U.S. again. And I had a job and I was taking care of my mom. And in that time, I knew that that wasn't where I needed to be. But I knew my mom needed me. But I said, there's a bigger thing here. And it took us about 3 years. And my mom and I started an organization. And she said, go to India. After I moved here in 2000 and spent 3 of the most, I would say, life-altering years with my mom. We never really got along. We finally became friends. And she blessed me. She fundraised for me. She was my right arm. And then I came here by what I call a miracle. You know, I challenged the universe and said, if you really want me to do this work, and I really want to work with children, here's my mission statement. Here's my vision. You give me free property. It was rather arrogant, I think, now. But universe provided. I got free 10 years of property from the Lions Club. So we're not using it. You can have it. Signed over. It was a MOU, you know, memorandum of understanding. I would take care of the property, built a little bit of it up, and I started my journey with the children in 2000. And it's been 21 years. I've raised 15 children.
So what? So yeah, tell me more. 15 children, raised them up. This is your life's work, you feel?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, tell me.
Through this journey, we've had ups and downs. One of my girls fell and was instantly paralyzed. She fell in school. And I say Divya is my greatest teacher in the world. I have two incredible teachers. Divya is my teacher of resilience. She fell, she went up and down for a while. And then once she sorted herself out, she finished her 10th, 12th college all online, all correspondence. And now she works for a major MNC in their communications department. And I really don't know exactly what she does, but she does something and she's typing all the time and she's in meetings. That's all I know. And I only know that because of COVID. So, and she's in a wheelchair and she takes herself around. She is extremely, extremely independent, fiercely strong for the family. And she is, she's my teacher of resilience.
Who's the second?
The second one is Venila. Venila is my, she was my second child who came in. And Venila suffers from cerebral palsy. And she was also poked in her eye when she was about 3 and was blind in that eye. And that's how she came to me. We had to do surgery for her. And we you know, did her surgery. And Venila is my teacher of unconditional love. And this is a child who really, really taught me how to open my heart. Children would make fun of her. Children would, because her hands were a little weak, and they'd say, hurry up and do this. And I would yell at them, and she would come to me. She goes, you don't need to yell at them. They don't know.
Isn't that beautiful?
And I mean, even now, just thinking about it, she's the one person who constantly brings me back to, it's okay.
Amazing, amazing amount of compassion.
Oh, she's the epitome of unconditional love. Anyone is sick, she's there. Anyone is hurting, she recognizes pain. And she's an amazing coach. I keep telling her, she just sits with people, holding space. One of my friends' mom wasn't well and asked for her. And she lived with them until her mom got better. And it's amazing. I said, she's one of my greatest teachers. And each child has taught me something very special, but these two kind of really stand out from how I have been transformed.
So there were 15, all ages?
All ages. My youngest is 9. My oldest is 33. We've got all shapes and sizes, married, divorced, single, lots of singles, which, and a lot of my single children want to be single parents like I was. So they're like, no, we don't need to get married. And I'm like, oh my gosh. But at the same time, they'll find their own journey.
They will. Yes, they will.
And lots of space given to them. But my youngest is 9, so I'm still in the game.
Right, I know. I hear you. Yeah. So is this something that's as fulfilling for you as it was when you started?
Oh, even more so. I think for me, the kids constantly ask me, what if you didn't choose to come here? Well, where do you see yourself? And I'm like, oh, I would have probably been married, possibly divorced. You know, I'd be living in the U.S. I'd probably be drinking a whole lot more. And I don't think my life I would be searching for each one of you. I said, you know, you guys brought me here. It wasn't me who chose to come here. You guys called me. And I listened to the call and I came. But it was definitely those, especially the first 4 or 5 of the kids, they were the ones who really, you know, just really just pulled me here, that energy. It is now, I tell my kids, I said, oh my God, you guys drive me crazy, but I couldn't imagine life without you. So I'm so glad you're there. And they keep me young. Mm-hmm. They keep me, you know, fit because I'm running around after them all the time. So it's, in a way, it's good. And they take care of me as much as I take care of them now, especially my older girls. They're there for me.
So, and I hear you. And Vimala, if I was to ask you to just snap out of it all right now and look at yourself and just see, what are you seeing? Just your first response to that, what do you see? What's happening with you right now?
Right now, what's happening with me is kindness and compassion. and living that every day, I made a promise to my teacher, my guru, Swami Kalikananda, who was an American Swami, went to World War II, couldn't find answers post-war with his faith, and landed up in the Vivekananda Society. And one of the Swamis there said, go to India. And he became a Swami. And Swami K told me, never leave a room worse than when you came in. Always leave a room better, even if you pick up one thing off the ground. Over the years, I mean, when he was talking about leaving a room, he meant cleaning. At that time, it was environment. And as I've grown up, I said, that's not really what he meant. He meant leave the room with your feelings, with people feeling something better, you feeling something better than when you came in. Now that has become a big part of who I am, is leaving spaces better than when I came in. Whether it's in my training, whether it's with my children, visiting friends, leave them in a better space.
And is that an adage that you live by?
Try to. Fail all the time, which is fine. That's how I learn and grow, especially with my children when I get triggered. And then say, okay, let's just calm down. Let's just, okay. But I do cognizantly kind of stay in spaces until it's all resolved for me. And it's tough at times, right? I mean, we deal with a lot. And I think COVID being in such close quarters all the time has challenged that. But it's a great, for me, it's one of my great principles to live with. And I think that that's something that I like to share with my children and let them then create the world for other people.
You also work a lot with as a trainer in the field of women and leadership and leadership development, and NLP is your, I think, your tool of choice here. And so how's that journey been, and how
that's been amazing. So I came upon NLP with one of my clients who became my friend, and most of my clients are my friends, so that's kind of how I partner with people. And was introduced to NLP through NeoA Academy with Ashlesh Rao, one of the best coaches, I would say, that in NLP, out of NLP, Ashlesh really, really supported my growth and through really tough times. I met Ashlesh in 2015 and started my journey with him and did my practitioner and my coach program with him. Mm-hmm. And then wanted to do my master trainer, but really wanted to explore other ways of doing NLP. And another client slash friend introduced me to Nishit Shah, who was doing an NLP master practitioner program in the Himalayas. Didn't know what that meant. And I thought, oh, it sounded good. And I wanted to get it done fast because you had to do your master prac and then you're train the trainer. So I said, okay, let me just do this. Didn't ask too many questions and went to Sandakpur. And in my mind, this is perception, my mind was this was going to be a trek, then we're going to sit and do some work, and then we'll have some reflection time. And that's how I imagined it. And I was also mistaken. We climbed 11 kilometers the first day, and it was a climb. And it was, you know, we were moving. And while we were moving, Nishit started installing ideas, beliefs, kind of elicited a lot of our values while we were walking. And
I guess just your mind stopped with that 11 kilometer trek up.
Yeah.
And that's the best time to plant some stuff, isn't it?
Exactly. And you're stretched, right? You stretch yourself, and it was cold. It was unseasonably cold. We did, you know, the first day 11, the next day 7, and then the last day 5, and then it got too cold. And in the last kilometer, Nishit's like, come with me, Vimla. We'll go off the beaten path. And by this time I was going like really slow. This was the last bit of it. And he's like, come. And he goes, just trust me. And I said, yeah, I trust you. And as we were going, all I heard was Nishit say, uh-oh, not what you want to hear when you're almost at the top of a mountain saying, uh-oh. I'm like, why? He goes, it's kind of icy, snowy. He goes, you have to be really careful and pay attention. And I said, you're there. I fall, you have to take care of my 15 children. So make sure I don't fall because they're all yours then. We got all the way up to the top, and it was one of those moments where you just fall into trust. You trust yourself, you trust the people you're with. And, you know, it was such an amazing experience. And on our way down was when I really started reflecting in how NLP wasn't just a bunch of tools and techniques. It was actually a way of life. The principles of excellence, which I experienced very live climbing, kind of really grounded myself in the experiential essence of excellence. And really, NLP is the study of human the subjective experience of humans and the structure of human excellence. When you look at the structure of excellence, my kids constantly tell me that they have excellence within them. I have to step out of the way 90% of the time and allow them to find their resources, to allow them, because I know they'll do it. And once I know, because I know I'll do it, and if I can do it, they can do it. So a lot of these principles became alive for me in studying NLP. And I continued studying with Nishit and finished my Train the Trainer program and then started to train with him in Thought Labs. And I'm an NLP trainer and coach for Thought Labs now. And it's an amazing experience. We have to touch people's lives in such a profound way, knowing they have any question, any doubt, any belief they have, it's within them, and to allow them that space to explore it.
It's probably incredibly humbling, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All there is learning and growth, and these kind of conversations like we're having now, I think is really what coaching is all about.
Yeah, and some of the gifts you received that shaped you.
I could think of three at the top of my head. And it sounds quite quaint, but my parents, number one, they were amazing. They were pioneers leaving a country, going to a country they had no idea what America was going to be like, and bringing three children along with them, courageously brave, like Chicago winters. And my mom always wore a sari, and my dad would come home from work after coming out of his suit and wear that white South Indian Brahmin, we used to call deshti, or, you know, that lungi, but was white. Yeah, and that's how we lived. They were very traditional Tambrams and raised us that way with a lot of, a melting pot of Indian and U.S. values. So work hard, fight for your rights, be confident, as well as be humble, service, and accept whatever comes. Oh, my dad constantly said, this is it. This is what you have. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to choose now with what you have? Because you can't cry over what you have. This is what you have. I think the second gift was my teacher, having a Swami in my life. And I met him when I was 8. He became my teacher when I was 18. And he got me to India. He got me to find my purpose and to stay present with my purpose, to follow the path that was much more difficult. And then the third gift, of course, was the highest gift were my children. And being able to live a life on purpose where things just kind of fell into place. And it was meant to be for these children. I mean, look, India is what, 6 million children in the whole country. And I ended up these 15 children. And I think for me, that was a sign of these are the right children for you. Everyone is my child. I think anyone who comes in contact with me said, yes, I'm just kind of like imbibe Mother Earth in me. And I do live by that because everyone needs a mom. And being a mom is that kindness, compassion, and making things better.
It's so interesting.
And so, yes. Yeah.
Are you also a mom to yourself?
Yes. Actually, that didn't actually happen for many, many years. And a curious thing happened. I fought marriage when I was young. So, you know, around 19, 20 years old, my parents started saying, okay, let's look for a nice boy for you. I have two older sisters at that time who were married and both had a proper
Tambram.
Doctors. I mean, come on.
I mean, yes.
And it was expected of the youngest to find that perfect doctor. And I was introduced to every eligible doctor, I think, at that time. And I kept telling my parents, no, I don't think this is it. Oh, I don't think I want to get married. And when I had my state of confusion, trying to figure everything out, from my mom's perspective, it was, once you get married, all this will settle down. And I'm like, oh, not sure if that will really work for me. And I fought the system. And I was the first female in all generations to leave home without getting married. And it was a, well, there you go. There's the little one.
Hello.
It has to be in every video. Okay.
Good to see you.
And it's snacks time. So constant. Yeah. So I think what I experienced from that was holding space for myself and really taking care of myself for the very first time was when I chose to say, this is what's right for me. And then I turned, well, I was around 44, 45 years old, it's 2009, and I had a family trip to Florida, to Disney World with my family. And I said, yeah, we'll all go. And I was on the fairy princess boat towards the Cinderella Snow White castle. And I said, oh my God, I want to experience love, romantic, that falling in love. And I was with my sister and she's like, what? She goes, really? It's taking you this long and you want to do this now? You have, you know, 10 kids at home at that time. I'm like, yeah, but I think I need to experience this. And so the journey started to find Vimala a man. And I dated, I didn't do anything online, but I met a lot of people. I met a lot of expats and all this stuff. And I had a thing that I really wanted to marry someone who could understand living in different countries and coming from different cultures. As fate would have it, I met a man from Chicago who was living in Bangalore and was practicing. He was a chiropractor.
What are the chances? Look at that.
And I became his patient. Then we started dating. We dated for about a year and a half to 2 years. I got married. We were married for a year and a half. And he suddenly had a hemorrhagic stroke and was in the hospital for about 4 months in a coma. And in those 4 months, my girls became women. They stood by me. They were vigil. They took care of him at night. If I had to go out for a program, they were the ones who really stood by me along with my friends. Couldn't have done it without them. And after he passed away, my world fell apart. This was not what was supposed to happen. And it was when NLP really stepped in. The amount of coaching that I had from Ashlesh and his team to support me through that was amazing. And then I stepped into the coaching. I recertified myself in coaching because I had stopped and I said, I need to understand who I am as a coach. And so I redid an 8-month program with them. And that really helped me kind of reframe the experience of loss to really feel that I got unconditional love. I experienced loving someone unconditionally, getting that in return, having that really deep emotional connection with someone before they leave the earth. I mean, I was holding my husband's hand when he left the earth, and that's a blessing.
Absolutely.
And as painful as it was, we come back to paradox. As painful and as maybe unfair it can be at sometimes, but it was my biggest growth and learning. And because of that experience, my children got their wings and flew. Divya moved to Bangalore, lived alone for 2.5 years. I trusted her and I said, yeah, go live in, you know, Jack's apartment. I'll go back. You know, I was going back and forth. I would visit her, but she owned her life then. Another child of mine was on the verge of considering getting married and was really unsure. And she said, you know, I think this is what I need to do. And she got clarity because she had that strength of, I can take care of myself. I can take care of someone who was really sick. I can make my decision. Yeah, she made a decision not to get married at that time, but it came from her experience of confidence in herself. And, you know, each one of my girls made decisions from a space of strength and because of what we went through together as a family and a space of no matter what, I'm going to be loved. That time in my life was, as I say, it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. And we come back to like paradox, you know, that's our life. But how we choose to see it really creates our experience of life.
So is there a space where the paradox is not? Does it ever happen?
I think there's no paradox when we are completely, completely dissociated with the body. And we're in that space of complete love and joy, and that may be seconds, or I think I've experienced it once.
Or the other way to perhaps look at it is then we're completely associated with the body.
Yes.
Completely associated with all there is. Perhaps yes. I don't know what you think, but as you speak. Yeah.
And that's really what, as soon as you enter this body, the body is duality for me.
Yeah.
Because that's where all our, you know, right, left comes in. But without this, I really believe there's a wonderful coach, Jamie Smart, who had this wonderful quote. Most people say, you know, we're not physical beings having a spiritual moment. We're a spiritual being having a physical moment. And he's taken that to the next level and says, we're a spiritual being having 7 billion experiences because we're all connected. And now through genealogy and through studying of DNA, we all are connected in some way. And when we find that connection, we come out of our body. We're not our body. We're 7 billion bodies.
Exactly.
And that to me was, I mean, that resonated so much with me. And I think that's when paradox does not exist.
It doesn't. Absolutely. Absolutely. And when we contract, we become so many. And when we expand, it's just one, I guess.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I truly believe that this time, this present moment that we're in with all the billion people in the world is absolutely perfect. Yes, there is war, there is suffering, there is death, but it's a perfect moment because we're all here. We're all experiencing this together. Mm-hmm. And it's the seed of empathy.
I think that's that's very powerful, isn't it, when we talk about the moment for the seed of empathy.
Yeah.
So I believe each individual has something special, something unique to offer to humankind in the tapestry. You know, it's the thread that you weave. What's your thread? What do you do? What do you bring? What's your gift?
I think my gift to the world is leaving it when I leave in a better place with the people I've touched, with the children I've raised, with the friends I've had, with the family that I support, and to leave with that one thread that will kind of be healing, be that little bit of better in some way, whether it's through kindness or compassion or listening or being very provocative and saying, really, that's what you want to do? So all of it comes through, and leaving that thread of just creating that space that, yes, she was here and it's better that she was here.
And I'm sure many will experience that, Vimla.
I hope so. I hope so.
Sure, I can see it. Look at what you've done with your life, and look at the way that you've decided to bloom and blossom. What you've done in the whole journey, not just for yourself, but you know, for so many. And I think that is really, really good. In terms of somebody just starting out, and you have had a lot of experience with this with your 15 kids starting out at different times, I'm sure.
Yes.
Say another Vimala or a younger Vimala. Is there something that you'd like to tell her?
I would say put on that seatbelt and you're in for a ride. Yeah. Because, you know, you're just in for the greatest adventure of your life. And I wouldn't change anything, even in a little way, because I think even the ups and downs and what I thought were unmanageable times in my life were where I grew the most. So I would say, put on that seatbelt and get in that roller coaster and just enjoy. Enjoy it now. Yeah.
And as we come to the close of this conversation, is there anything else you'd like to say?
I'd like to thank you for creating this space for me personally, but also for all the people that you interview and you speak to and you coach through this, and for all the lives you've touched because of those conversations. I think that I would like to leave you with an acknowledgement and a deep sense of gratitude to the work you're doing. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you so much, Vimala. And I hope that the children that you have brought up, 15 of them, will go ahead, each one of them, and exponentially give back, pay forward all the love, all that you have done towards helping them grow. And I'm sure, and I'd love to hear more about that at another point. And how are they
absolutely
transferring this? How are they impacting the world? Because that's what an opportunity, and how beautifully you've made use of that. And grown power, actually,
yeah.
Power of impact. And I think that is
someday we'll do that.
Have another chat. Yeah?
All right. Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Vimala. It's been an absolute joy to host you, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Shiva.
Thank you for your time and attention, and for being a part of Soul Brews with Shiva. Until next week, keep the coffee swirling.